This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It is great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. On today's Noon Business Hour, it is Travel Tuesday. We will talk about how food is driving a lot of people's vacations. Also, Ford adding lots of jobs, hundreds of them here in Chicago. All credit cards not created equal when it comes to college students. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, though, Britain is getting a new prime minister while a forecast of global economic growth is out. Let's talk about that, plus the latest snapshot of the U.S. housing market. Gus Fauché is joining us. Gus is chief economist at PNC Financial Services, based in Pittsburgh. Gus, welcome back to the show. Let's begin with the news out of the U.K. Boris Johnson is prime minister. Not a surprise. This is sort of expected, but what can we expect economically from Boris Johnson being there? What does this say to people?
Well, obviously, the incoming Prime Minister Johnson has called for a rapid exit from the UK, for the UK from the European Union. There's no deal in place. The European Union has been pretty tough in negotiating with the UK. The members of Parliament have said they do not want a hard Brexit. They want a deal in place. Prime Minister Johnson has said that he would leave without a deal, so we'll have to see how that plays out. But certainly I think leaving the European Union without a deal in place would cause significant disruptions for the UK economy and a steep recession. So I think there's a reluctance to take that step.
And it's interesting just to sort of see the back and forth here between Europe and the UK and who's really in the power position here. What about the US? Is there any sort of impact to the US of a Brexit with no deal?
I don't think so. I think the impact, first of all, I think the European Union holds most, if not all, of the cards, and the UK really doesn't have much leverage. But I think even if there is a hard Brexit, if we see a substantial recession in the United Kingdom, that wouldn't have much impact on the U.S. economy. It would be a slight negative for the European Union economy, but I think the impact on the U.S. would be pretty small.
Let's talk about some data. Existing home sales fell nearly 2% in June. That was more than expected.
That's right. But if you look at sales since the spring, they've been flat, existing home sales. There are some countervailing forces here. We do have reduced affordability. At the same time, mortgage rates have gone down, which is a positive. I do think that as the economy continues to expand and mortgage rates remain low, that we will see a pickup in housing activity in the second half of 2019. Not a boom or anything like that, but modest gains. And I would expect that we'll see sales go up in the second half of this year.
Are we little by little getting to a point where not as many people are underwater? I know for a long time that kept people from even putting their houses on the market because they just couldn't stand to lose that much money.
That's right. And I think that, broadly in the U.S. economy, we have seen house prices increasing to above their peak prior to the Great Recession. And I think that most people now, they've been making payments. We're seeing much reduced rate of foreclosures. So I think that homeowners have gradually built up equity in their houses once again. And I think that that will be a positive for home sales in the second half of this year.
The IMF has lowered its global economic growth forecast by 0.1%. Is that significant or is that like a minor blip?
It's a minor blip, but we have seen the IMF marking down its forecast for 2019 throughout this year. So it isn't just the recent markdown that we had, but we've seen it happen throughout 2019. We are seeing a definite slowing in global trade growth. Some of that is due to the trade tensions between the United States and China, some of our other major trading partners. Some of it is due to uncertainty over Brexit. But it looks like we are seeing slower global economic growth this year. And obviously, I think that that's bad news for the U.S. economy. It's a drag on U.S. growth. We're going to see the U.S. continue to expand, but the U.S. would be benefiting if global growth were stronger.
Gus Fauché, always good insight. Gus is chief economist at PNC Financial Services. Coming up, the best credit cards for college students as they prepare to head off to school.
Money Talks, as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
As students get ready to head to college, it's a good time to look into the best options for credit cards. Let's get some help from Ted Rossman, an industry analyst at creditcards.com, based in New York. Ted, before we get into some specifics of the cards, I know there are some parents out there who would say the best credit card for college students is no credit card. What do you say to those folks who are afraid of their kids in credit?
Being afraid of overspending and going into debt is a very valid concern, especially with the average credit card rate pushing 18% these days. Counterpoint to that, responsible credit card use helps you build credit, and that's going to be really useful in the long run. Everything from renting an apartment to getting a car loan, other financial products. It's great to start early, but be responsible.
And when it comes to our society, I mean, we're increasingly a cashless society where if you don't know how to manage credit, you're not really going to be able to get around.
And you could stick to a debit card. That'll at least let you make online purchases. It's not always the easiest thing, though, when it comes to travel, because, for example, renting a car is difficult with a debit card. Putting down a deposit at a hotel is difficult. Not that it can't be done, but there are some definite perks to using credit from a convenience standpoint, and the rewards, certainly. Credit card rewards, if you can pay your bills in full, are a big plus.
Well, let's talk about rewards. I want to get to the first credit card, too, but since you mentioned it, let's talk rewards for a student looking to rack up points and actually make something out of this. What's the best option?
I'll give you two options, and then happy to go into more depth, but for somebody who wants to keep it really simple, I like the Journey Student Credit Card from Capital One. If you pay on time, they'll give you 1.25% cash back on everything. That's very simple. There's also the Bank of America Cash Rewards Credit Card for students. If you want to do a little bit more work and get a little bit higher return, you can get 3% cash back in one category of your choosing, and then 2% cash back on groceries, and then 1% on everything else.
So that's really not only teaching your students how to use credit, but also that there can be benefits. You can actually get something out of it.
As long as you pay your bills in full, then, yeah, rewards are fantastic. You're going to build a good credit score through using these responsibly. Consider also other fees. Now, none of the cards that I've mentioned charge an annual fee. But think about foreign transaction fees, too. If you're going to be traveling abroad, that is definitely a consideration.
Now, tell us briefly, if you have a high GPA, is there actually a card for you?
There are some cards for you. Yes, that's right. Discover, actually, will give a $20 bonus every year you get a GPA of 3.0 or higher on both of their student cards, the Discover It Student Chrome and the Discover It Student Cash Card.
That's pretty nice. All right, Ted Rossman, thanks for being with us. He's an industry analyst for creditcards.com. Up next, Ford continues to expand its operations in Chicago. Hundreds of jobs coming here.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Ford has announced it is going to be building more vehicles in Chicago, and that means more employees. Let's get the details now from Jeff Gilbert, CBS auto reporter based in Detroit. Jeff, kind of give us a thumbnail sketch. What is Ford saying it is going to do here?
Yeah, first it's going to take 450 temporary workers and make them permanent. That means it'll be hiring some more temporaries as well. And what they're actually going to do is build what they call an incremental assembly line, one that will build hybrid versions, plug-in hybrid versions of the SUVs they're making there, as well as the police interceptor version, so that this line will make the specialty versions of those vehicles, and that way they can pump out more Explorers, more Lincoln Aviators on the main assembly lines.
And this is, I see the hybrid just showing that that is really the way things are going here. They're seeing the demand for it.
Yeah, and not only are they seeing the demand for that, if they can build the hybrid, and they'll also have a plug-in hybrid version of the Aviator, if they can build those specialty vehicles on this new line, that also lets them build more SUVs on the other line. So don't forget what the market is like for conventionally powered SUVs as well. So Ford is just assuming it's going to be selling more Explorers and Aviators, so it's going to have to pump those out as well.
So they are taking 450 workers. They'll become full-time. They'll also then hire some other part-time workers to sort of replace them. What sort of a sign is that about how things are going with Ford? I know there were a lot of questions about them as they've had some ups and downs over the last few years.
Yeah, and the sign is if you work at a plant that makes vehicles like the Explorer, you're in pretty good shape. If you were to work at a plant that happens to make like the old Ford Taurus, maybe not such good shape. In fact, just as Ford is upgrading its plant in Chicago, it's laying off some workers at a plant in Ontario that makes some of these slower-selling crossovers, the Flex and the Ford Edge.
So in that sense, it is good for all those workers here in the Chicago area that they just happen to build what they just happened to build.
Exactly, and that's been the case at all major auto companies. I mean, if you look at the plants that General Motors is closing, it's closing car plants while it's investing in the plants that make utilities and particular pickup trucks because those are what people are buying.
Now, one of the things about hybrids that we've heard, whether it's Ford or otherwise, is the battery and how unpredictable that can be, how expensive it is to replace. I would imagine as more and more money is being spent, they're getting better at the battery life and the experience of the battery.
Yeah, not only that, but they're also able to make the battery smaller because the first hybrids, if you think back to the original Prius and Ford's original Escape hybrid, they didn't have a lot of storage room because the battery took up a lot of your trunk or a lot of your hatch. Now they've found ways to make that battery smaller and make better placement. So if you buy a hybrid, you don't give up cargo space.
Ford adding 450 full-time jobs here in Chicago. Thank you, Jeff Gilbert, CBS Auto Reporter. Still ahead, Travel Tuesday, how food is playing an increasing role in how and where people plan trips. Good afternoon, I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Travel Tuesday on the show, making food a major part of your next trip. The second quarter proved to be a tough one for Milwaukee-based Harley-Davidson. The city is reworking its fine and fee policies in an effort to help lower-income residents. Boris Johnson's being congratulated by President Trump and other world leaders as he prepares to become Britain's next prime minister. On Wall Street, the Dow up 75, NASDAQ is up 11, and the S&P is up 9 points. Oil is up just a tick. Sunshine throughout Chicagoland, a chance for some light rain showers, maybe even a thunderstorm later this afternoon. We're heading to a high of 82 degrees. Right now, 78
CBS
at O'Hare
update.
And 77 degrees rather along Chicago's lakefront. Markets are higher at this hour. We're joined by Nick Raich, CEO of the Earnings Scout, based in Cleveland. His website, earningsscout.com. Nick, great to have you back on the show. What do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, it's all about the earnings that came in. We had 20 S&P 500 companies report early this morning before the bell, and 15 of them are trading higher, on average up about 2% today. So we saw most of them beat estimates. And we, in total, now have about 21% of the S&P 500 has now reported second quarter results, and they're coming in better than feared. We're seeing positive growth for those 21% companies that report. That's 105 in total, and we're seeing, you know, on about 7% growth and about 3% sales growth. So pretty good numbers here, much better than feared. And from, you know, beginning of the year, everyone thought there was going to be an earnings recession, and we're still reporting positive growth here. So that's some very solid numbers and a good start to earnings season.
A pretty good start, and yet we haven't seen any big swings today or yesterday. Is it sort of a, maybe on the part of most investors, kind of a wait and see how the rest of earnings season goes?
Right. The overall market's fairly muted, but the companies that have reported, we're seeing some good news. Hasbro, Sherwin-Williams, Coca-Cola, Fifth Third, Biogen are all up over 5% right now after earnings this morning. So there's been some good numbers there. Now, not everything has been positive. Pulte Homes reported some disappointing numbers. Travelers with some disappointing numbers, and they're lower. But again, that's in the minority. The majority of companies here are reporting positive beats. And we are, if there is bad news, we're seeing the third quarter numbers, the estimates go lower after companies report. That's the bad news. The good news is not by much. The estimate cuts are a lot less severe so far for the companies that have reported than what we saw in last quarter or the quarter before that. That's a big reason why that improvement in earnings expectations trends on a rate of change basis is why we're right near all-time highs.
Now, let's talk about Coca-Cola. It impresses. It does better than expected. I think maybe even better than its CEO expected.
Right, and it's popping today. It's been a disappointer this year overall. The stock's up on the year, but was only up about 8% year-to-date, you know, under the market, but had solid 6% organic sales growth. And again, growth. Many people at the beginning of this year were pricing in that we were going to have an earnings recession. And even in this earnings season, people were talking earnings recession, negative earnings growth. But it's positive 6% organic sales growth for Coke, and that's one reason the market's cheering the stock on today.
So you're right. We did keep hearing about the earnings recession. So what is going on? Are companies just figuring out how to win? Are consumers spending more than expected? Or some of the scary things in the economy just not happening? I mean, what's going on here?
Well, some of it's the way the earnings game's played. So the earnings recessions are forecasted by the street, but those are very conservative estimates. So it paves the way for companies to beat. The companies are going to give analysts on Wall Street conservative guidance. The analysts will take the numbers and keep those conservative. So it allows for 75 to 80% of the companies to beat estimates. So they're sort of manufactured positive surprises. So we never saw the estimates, even though they were forecasting minus 1% earnings growth. That wasn't a lower enough number on the estimate side to really get an actual number that's going to be negative. So anyone who thought that earnings recession was going to come really doesn't understand how the earnings game is played. We certainly do. And we're seeing growth slow this year, but again, positive growth nevertheless, and hopefully we're expecting it to reaccelerate in the back half of the year.
Another company that impressed, United Technologies, pretty good second quarter.
Very, very good numbers out of United Tech. They reported 220 versus an estimate of 204, beat on the top line too. Very good results, and it's, again, one of many that did well this morning in terms of better than expected what the Wall Street forecasts were.
Now, let's talk about GE for a moment. GE up about 3.5% today, just slowly but surely rising today. Again, up about 3.5%. This is a company that, at least stock-wise, seems to have stabilized after quite a free fall.
It certainly was one that has to earn the trust back of Wall Street, you know, from the accounting standpoint, from new management. But it's certainly, you know, brand name. The one thing we see with it, you help GE and many others. Even though these earnings results we're telling you are growth or positive, one thing that's going to help juice the economy is the Fed's going to set here to cut rates, which will really help lift capital spending and plans and keep revenue growing strong and hopefully extend the cycle out another 1 to 2 years at minimum.
Yeah, talk, Nick, about the importance for leadership in companies to evolve as the marketplace changes. I mean, I'm thinking of GE, I'm thinking of Sears, two companies, big challenges, didn't necessarily evolve like they needed to. And then contrast that with Coca-Cola, which we talked about earlier. They realized fewer people are buying sugary beverages, so they're selling more water and more coffee.
Adapt or die, you have to evolve, and Coca-Cola's done a good job of that, you know, into the Coke Zero, into some waters and brands like that. So that is something that you have to do. It's an ever-changing world, and the world today is different than it was 10 years ago and certainly 30 years ago, and you have to adapt. That's one thing that, you know, why when you invest in a company, you need a good management team that has that vision, you know, not over the next 10 days or next quarter, but the 5 to 10 to 20-year vision for the company and what the outlook's going to be. And no one knows, has a crystal ball for sure of what's going to happen. But the ones, the best leaders seem to have that knack to know how to evolve the correct way.
Nick Raich, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate your analysis. Nick is CEO of the Earnings Scout. You can find him online at earningsscout.com. Up next, Travel Tuesday, the increasing culinary connection in planning vacations. The Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday here on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Hamilton County Tourism. Today, we're getting a taste of hot travel trends, including the food-focused destination. We welcome Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher of JoeSentMe.com, based in New York. Joe, so what we're talking about here is people who decide where they will vacation based on what kind of food they want to enjoy.
Hello, Cisco, I think, and happy lunchtime. I think food has always been a driving factor in how people travel. even think locally. How many people who come to Chicago, the first thing they want to do is run to somewhere and eat some deep dish pizza because they can't get it at home. So when people travel internationally or even elsewhere in the United States, they begin looking for food destination. They, in a way, they become food pilgrims. Let's go eat everything in Charleston. Let's, you know, first hit the Reading Terminal Market in Philadelphia and eat all the stuff we don't know there. Certainly France, Italy, Tokyo, you pretty much name it. People will drive and fly for food.
And hot sauce, believe it or not, hot sauce is one of those things people will travel for. More and more people using it regularly, and they want certain tastes, and they want the best.
Well, we need to give the Wall Street Journal full credit here. They ran a story in the last several weeks about how the boom in hot sauce, and you walk into any grocery gourmet market or even the supermarket, and you'll now see a huge stock of hot sauce. And the Journal was able to suggest that you can have a causation. People go to places like Mexico, places like Southeast Asia, where spice and sauces matter. They come home and want the same sauces on their food at home, and that's driven a huge upswing in the sales of hot sauces. So again, it comes back to people do travel, the old joke about armies traveling on their stomach. Well, so do leisure travelers in many ways.
Yeah, and it's so they come home and they want certain things. I guess there's probably no way to measure this, but I wonder if it would work opposite, where someone here in the U.S. has a flavor, loves it, and then thinks about vacationing in that area.
I think that's absolutely very true. Everyone eats, and everyone wants to eat things that they enjoy the taste of. So if they're not familiar with it, I'm lucky. I live in New York. You guys are lucky. You live in Chicago, where there is so much ethnic cuisine available to us that we could go into a restaurant, say it's Indian or Nepalese or Japanese or even Italian or French. We taste that cuisine for the first time. It drives an interest in the culture and the destination. And people say, well, gee, I love, Nepalese momos, dumplings. Let's go to Nepal. It happens, and it's one of the touchstones that people use to decide where they want to go next.
Yeah, I used to live in Albany Park, and there you have literally the whole world right there at your doorstep. Within a few blocks, you have restaurants from all over the world. We are spoiled in Chicago and New York for sure. So people should take advantage of it and then maybe go visit those countries.
Absolutely. I think it's one of the great joys of living in an urban area in the United States is our melting pot that really is more about a sense of individual saucepans. When you go to a lot of countries, the only cuisine you will get is their local cuisine. I mean, no one goes to France to eat Italian food. You go to France to eat French food. But if you're smart, you might go to Montreal and eat all of the cuisines of what used to be the French colonies. So you can get Vietnamese, African. And that's the joy of travel, is finding new things.
You're right. So, for example, no one goes to New York for pizza, right? Right, Joe? Right?
I don't know why they would when they could go to Italy. But if you can't go to Italy for pizza, you could try our thin style, as opposed to what I have to admit is not my favorite deep dish.
Oh, you're missing out, man! You're missing out.
Sorry, sister.
Thank you.
I'll try tavern anytime, though. Tavern style always works.
That's good. Let us know when you're in town. All right, we'll treat you for sure. Joe Prancatelli, editor and publisher at JoeSentMe.com. He's based in New York. This time tomorrow, Personal Finance Wednesday, still to come. Harley Davidson, it's the story stock of the day.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Harley Davidson has endured a rough second quarter. Let's talk about the prospects for the Milwaukee-headquartered motorcycle maker. Garrett Nelson is joining us, automotive analyst at CFRA Research, based in Rockville, Maryland. Garrett, I guess a sales slide continues at Harley Davidson.
That's right. It wasn't a very good quarter for them. Their earnings were down about 4% for the quarter. But more importantly, they lowered their motorcycle sales guidance for the full year. They're now expecting to sell about 215,000 motorcycles, down from about 220,000 before. And they also lowered their margin guidance for those motorcycles. So Not a great release for Harley-Davidson.
Is it possible to tell, I don't know if all the data's in or not, is it that people are buying fewer motorcycles in general, or is this a Harley issue?
No, you're right. People are buying fewer motorcycles. For Harley-Davidson, this is a problem that goes back several years. Their annual motorcycle sales actually peaked way back in 2006 at about 350,000. So their annual sales have fallen very steadily now for 13 years, and they're down about 40% from the peak. It's a problem, a long-term secular problem, we think. And what they're trying to do is diversify, grow in faster-growing Asian markets such as India and China. But the problem with that is we think the motorcycle sales are much lower margin over in those markets. So they certainly have their fair share of challenges looking forward.
Is there a way for Harley to evolve here? We talked earlier about how Coca-Cola and how they evolved and are doing well. We talked about how Sears did not evolve and did not do well. Can Harley do anything? I mean, it's pretty much motorcycles.
Right. They're trying. I mean, they're looking at electric bikes. They're spending money on research and development of all kinds of different products, but the bread and butter of this company are really the old motorcycles that really appeal to the older generation of riders, and that generation just don't have the same kind of demand from younger generation, and the millennials are just not that interested in buying Harley-Davidson, and about 60% of their sales are to the U.S. market, so that's a problem for them.
Do you have a recommendation on the stock? I'm looking at it right now. It's at $36. It's ironically, it's up about 5.5% today.
We do. We have a sell recommendation on the stock with a $30 target.
Thanks so much, Garrett Nelson, automotive analyst at CFRA Research, based in Maryland. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, the replay podcast will be available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.